There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me as always, my trusty companion and stalwart buddy, Timmy D. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in with us this evening, especially those of you checking us out on OmniSound Radio 1. Like the fact that you're there with us. Also, all of our friends over in Australia that are checking us out on Ghost Radio X, would like to thank you for joining us. This evening, we've got a great guest coming up for us. Many of you are aware of all the different paranormal shows that have popped up on the TV over the last year here. Last 2 years, actually. There's been a really good show that just came out this summer, and I guess I shouldn't say just came out. They did a few specials last year, but this series has just kicked off this summer, and it is called Haunting Evidence. It's a fantastic brand new show. It's a half-an-hour format. It's found on the Court TV channel on Wednesday evenings at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And our guest this evening is Carla Barron. Carla is a psychic, she's a medium, and she's a psychic profiler on the TV show that I was just mentioning to you with Haunting Evidence. She's also been seen on many different shows, from Psychic Detectives to ABC's Primetime, Dead Famous on Biography Channel, and also MTV's Fear. So we'd like to welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town this evening, Ms. Carla Barron. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good evening, gentlemen.
I appreciate you taking time out with us on your busy schedule to do this. You've got a lot on your plate. Besides doing the TV shows, you're still helping involved in active police cases, correct?
When the cameras stop rolling, I'm still going, guys.
Okay.
No sleep, no holidays, no weekends, no social life. And now's the time to take out the tissues and start crying for me. No, I mean, seriously,
sure.
I am working nonstop. But you know what? I can't imagine ever, ever doing anything else with my life. I really enjoy what I do. I like knowing that, you know, when I'm waking up in the morning, I'm thinking about my day. And you know, I try to have some lightheartedness in between all the gruesome details that I have to deal with on the cases. So I sprinkle in some private sessions and some downtime for me in between, which is usually at 2 a.m. when I'm watching my DVDs or reading a book or working online, just doing things to keep myself out of it. And
listening to archived shows of Darkness on the Edge of Town, right?
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. And you know, it's in fact your little bumper, your intro music, and your little talk there. I'm all in the mood now.
All right. Hey, I've got a question for you. Now, we've had psychics on the show. We've had mediums on the show. What exactly is a psychic profiler, and how does that work?
Well, I actually coined that term a couple of years ago because psychic detective, I never was really down with that.
Oh, okay.
I'm not trying to diss them at Court TV, and I was
sure.
On the pilot episode. John Edwards was actually on with us. And he actually knew the producers from before, from an HBO special they did called Life After Life. So everybody knew everybody, and he came on to give his two cents about, you know, psychics working with police and law enforcement, and he did a fine job. And I came on and did, you know, a case that was ongoing, actually, and that was the pilot episode for Psychic Detectives, and, of course, the phenomenon grew out of that. And, you know, they were really the first ones on the scene with such a program. And then Medium came, and then all the other ones came, but it seems
right.
That Psychic Detectives, you know, sort of broke the barrier, if you will, and I was happy to be involved. But I never thought of myself as a psychic detective, because a detective means you're on scene.
Right.
You're at the crime scene with the police, you know, and I wasn't. My profiling was happening psychologically over the phone and psychically, you know, into the unknown. So it was more I was profiling the perpetrator or the victim or the scene itself, and I could see it in my head, and it was easier for me to grasp details in a remote fashion versus actually being on scene. So that's where I came up with the term, because Profiler, the series on NBC that was on the Saturday Night Trilogy, do you remember that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was, again, no social life, so I was watching on Saturday night, date night. I'm watching Allie Walker, and I'm thinking, you know, I kind of look like her, and she's the profiler, and I am the psychic profiler, and I sort of said that to my friends, and they said, you know what, that's exactly what you do. And from then on, in any interviews I gave or newspaper articles, this is how they referred to me. And it fit, and I liked it, and so we kept it, and Court TV loved it. And they actually wanted to steal it from me, and I said, no, it's my trademark. Cannot have that.
Now, you know, I've got to, watching the show, I've got to tell you, I've become a big fan of it. First of all, I like a lot of the true crime shows because they just amaze me, especially with all the forensic things that they can do now and the way they're able to catch these perpetrators. And then to come out with a show like yours, I mean, to me, seems brilliant. I've become a huge fan of the show, really enjoy watching it. I haven't missed an episode yet. And for those of you that haven't seen it, shame on you. Again, it's on Wednesday nights, 10:30 Eastern time on Court TV. It's a great little show. You've got Carla Baron on there, who is a psychic profiler. You also have, his name is John Oliver, is that correct?
That's correct.
And he is a medium and a psychic as well. And then you've got Patrick Burns, who we had on our show just before the series kicked off for the summer, and he is the paranormal investigator. They've brought the three of you together. Now, Patrick is the only one that has the background information regarding the crimes when you go to these sites.
Well, in this first season, you know, to be honest, some of the case files came directly out of my case files, and I opened them up for the producers because, you know, we were trying out the show different ways of airing the episodes. Half of the episodes are cases where neither John nor myself have ever heard of these people or these places before. We didn't even know where we were going. They usually fly us in a couple hours away from the location, and we drive in. So we honestly don't know where we're going at all. We don't know the town. It could be anywhere. And it's usually 2 to 3 hour drive.
Well, that's what's
so amazing.
We're
all driving. You know, we don't have hoods over our heads, but we...
Hey, that's for season two.
No, that's for MTV Sphere. You know,
oh,
that was
true.
Back
right.
In the days when they used to tie their hands and put hoods on their heads. But, no, we don't know where we're going. We literally are dropped off, and we go to the place, and then they tell us the name of the town, and we don't know what's happening. So there's no way that we're bringing computers and Googling everything and finding out what's going on. The other cases we did were... actually unsolved. I had never been to the locations, nor had I met with the families personally. I had been on the phone with them a couple of times. Some of them had been publicized because they were higher profile cases, such as Ray Grecar and the Tara Grinstead episode that's coming up this Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be huge because it's a nationally known case. A lot of people are looking forward to seeing the work we've done, because we are moving this forward, and we already know that the work on this case is some of the details we came up with for the family, they're actually running with before the show even airs. So they're letting us know that some of this information has already come to pass.
Awesome.
Yeah. So as far as not knowing the information ahead of time on some of the episodes I did, but I honestly have to tell you, when I got to the location, so much more clear. It was like 4D compared to the two-dimensional thing I was getting before. I noticed that a lot more detail rushed forward. It had a lot more clarity. I could see details on a timeline. I could see, while I was standing at the location where the victim was taken, or you know, the victim's home, or actually connecting directly with the family members, I had a much larger sense of what happened. I could connect the dots easily.
Mm-hmm.
Before, I had this disconnected feeling, and that was something that I discovered about my own ability, that it's much better when I'm there. Not to say that the work I've done on the other ones isn't good. It's great, but it's not as prevalent as the work that I've done on this series, and that's what this series gave back to me. They gave me a sense of what else I could do, and I took it further, and I was so happy that this happened and that this series came into being. I was congratulating Court TV on their vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to actually put something like this out on the air. It's courageous of them. It really is, because we aren't just re-examining the cases with the families. We aren't just taking a grieving family and airing their dirty laundry in front of everyone, making them go through that gruesome event one more time. It's something where we all understand how important the role of the media plays nowadays, how important the role of the family being empowered to go out there and change legislation, and how when we go on the searches, I'm with them on the searches on the weekends. I mean, once the cameras stop rolling, I'm still there. I'm still with them trying to ferret out details of, you know, what was discovered at a certain location on the next search. You know, I'm working with them as we go along. It's not just, you know, the half hour or the 22 minutes we see on the episode.
Right.
I still continue. I don't know if John does, but I have on my cases anyway.
Do you ever find yourself while you're doing this, I mean, if you watch a show, you know, there's a lot of times where it's very emotional, not only for the families that you're helping, but I've watched you just, you know, reduce to tears and almost like a panic or a fear that you're feeling up for the victim that you know, the crime occurred to. Have there been many times in your life where you've just had to step away and say, I can't do this, I need a break, this is way too intense for me?
I know myself well enough to know my demeanor and where my breaking point is, and thank God I have Moon in Gemini, because that allows me to, you know, sort of get tired of one emotion. I have to move to the next one or I'll go crazy. So I have a little barometer set inside myself where I know where to stop, and I can get to sleep at night because I do other things to get my mind off of it. I don't think about these things 24/7. Visions don't rush forward and prevent me from sleeping.
Right.
Sometimes details will come without the emotion, and that's how I generally like to receive them. I don't like to be emotionally connected to the instance or the family, or to get too close to that family while I'm looking at the information, because it does hamper what's going on with me. I usually like to step aside and get down to the detail, matter-of-factly, deliver it that way, tell them, look, I'll take care of you emotionally later. We'll do the healing part later. I'll give you tools in how to go to the next step. How do you deal with the loss of this individual in your life? How do you have tomorrow? You know, what can you do to make utter sense of this tragedy? You know, how can you guys piece it together for yourselves? Because you're still here and they're not.
Right.
You know, and I find myself helping them with that. And that gives me great joy to just be able to help them empower themselves.
If I can ask now, when you do what you do, are you speaking to a spirit guide of your own? Are you speaking to angels, God, the spirit of the person that was passed on? Or is it a mixture of all of the above?
That's a good question. Actually, it's not so much based on a religious belief, because I embrace all belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody has their own filter that they are going through each particular incarnation with. So you don't want to disturb that. You want to enhance it. You want to give them choices. You want them to be able to have free will in order to accumulate and build on their own belief system, you know, because that's why they're here.
Sure.
To tell people what to believe and to force that on them is non-productive.
Well, I don't mean necessarily, you know, forcing. I was just curious,
right,
how
no,
it comes
but you
to
want
you.
To know where I'm getting it from.
Oh, right.
I wanted
right.
to explain that about. No, I know what you meant.
Okay,
I just wanted to explain that about the, you know, where I'm coming from when I approach a case or I approach a reading in general. Some people don't buy into the whole reincarnation thing. You know, and I understand that going in, so I preface it with, okay, if reincarnation does indeed exist,
mm-hmm.
this is how I see it. You know, and I let them know that that's their choice to go explore and learn and look into the unknown for themselves. You know, and hopefully I'm igniting a part of them that wants to go do that then and go on their own quest.
Right.
As far as where I'm getting my information from, I go direct. Always the best way, and
sure.
that's been my credo, it seems, since I began. And I don't like the middleman, so I try to go direct to the victim or the perpetrator's mind. I get inside there, and I don't go unless I'm invited. And if I'm invited into a case, it's all fair game, and they can't hide from me.
Now, one of the questions we keep getting, you know, as soon as I mentioned that you were going to be on the show, you know, we got the same kind of question emailed over and over. Well, how many cases do they solve? Da, da. When you're called in, you're not actually called in to solve a case. You're just there to maybe shed some light or bring new evidence or a new look at what you're doing. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, usually it's the families that contact me, and I know that with John, he generally won't even deal with the families. I mean, he has said in many interviews that the families can't help propel the case along. It's the law enforcement that can. In my cases, I'm sort of a vigilante, if you will, but I don't want to give people the wrong impression that I'm going to go in there and get them to change the ruling on a case,
sure.
Although I have done that. I seem to have no fear when it comes to dealing with this because I've dealt with a lot of corruption. And sometimes in the southern states, perhaps, you know, or, you know, other places, you know, they get overwhelmed. The police have to defer to someone else. The case gets lost. They don't have time. You know, the families are put aside. We'll let you know if we get anything. But until then, just sit tight. You know, and these families, that's their entire life.
Right.
Was their child or their loved one or their sister or their mother or whatever it was. And they will spend the rest of their lives every day waking up, going to sleep, thinking about this. So, you know, I try to empower them, and it's been working. And I've noticed a lot of cases that come to me have the element of anything is possible. So when I'm brought in, even if it's one thing that I am seeing that propels it along, one catalyst, that's all we need. That's all you need to awaken this case.
Right, it's just that one little nugget that they might have overlooked, something that you're seeing that they didn't, right.
Sure, and we're not looking to shame the police into position with this or shame them into doing their job.
No, now, it's giving a fresh set of eyes to a subject that's been beaten. So sometimes you look at something so long you miss the obvious, and it's
right,
and they hire other consultants that have no psychic ability at all to come in, and that's not a shameful thing. It's just smart enough to know that sometimes you need a little extra help to get the right thing done.
I totally agree. And I see, you know, they bring in profilers.
Exactly.
You know, they bring them in from the FBI and whatnot, and they'll come and bring their set of eyes to a situation for behavioral profiling or looking at the case from that aspect, and their elements are unknown. And it's just that my elements reach into an area that's on a timeline. It's outside of the realm of time and space as they know it. The past looks exactly the same as the future to me. And let me get something straight. Each case has its own timeline, and each case has a solve point that cannot be altered usually. You can't hasten a case to be solved before its time. And there's a reason for that. Usually certain elements have to be present where all the lessons are combined, and all the lessons need to be recognized and acknowledged before that case solves. And what I mean by that is, You have the families, you have the psychic profiler, you have law enforcement, you have the media, you have cadaver dog teams, you have search parties, you have community members, you have all of these elements playing a role, contributing their piece of the puzzle. And you'll notice today when you look on Fox News Channel or you look on CNN or any of the other channels distributing the news nowadays, you'll notice that a lot of these cases aren't solving into the point where everyone's placed their piece of the puzzle down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's community effort. It's a group lesson, a group karma, if you will, that I believe that's happening here. And, you know, it's not worshiping the psychic. It's not worshiping the almighty law enforcement. It's not giving any one faction undue praise, but everyone has a role to play, including the family.
Well, it's amazing what you do, and you know, like I said, for those of you that are just tuning in, you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest this evening is Carla Barron, and Carla is a psychic, a medium, and she's a psychic profiler on the hit new TV show on Court TV Network, seen every Wednesday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The name of the show is Haunting Evidence. It's a great new show that puts together a medium, a psychic profiler, and a paranormal investigator to go out and give a fresh look at a cold case and a case that has been left aside for a while so that they can perhaps come up with some new clues, some new insights, some new vision on what might have actually occurred in these crimes. It's a great new show. Carla Barron is our guest, and we're going to be back more with Carla Barron right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, but she moves! She moves!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
If you, read Taspara Mag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taspara Mag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at TapsParamag.com.
Jonathan the Impaler Sharkey is a self-proclaimed vampire who wants to be the next governor of Minnesota. He's quite serious about it, actually. The Impaler joins us live tonight from Minneapolis. Mr. Sharkey, thanks a lot for coming on.
Tucker, please call me Jonathan. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. I like to call you the Impaler. So you're a vampire. Whose blood do you feed on, and how do you do that, and why?
I do not feed on men. I'm sorry. I just can't imagine myself wrapping my teeth around a man. However, I would love to get a hold of Bin Laden and impale him.
Well, wouldn't you make a frisky governor? Don't forget to vote in November. And welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Good evening and welcome back to The Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. And our guest this evening is from the hit new TV show on Court TV called Haunting Evidence. Our guest is Carla Barron, and she's a psychic, a medium, and a psychic profiler. And if you'd like more information about Ms. Barron, you can check out her website at carlabarron.net, and that's CARLABARON.net. She's got a fascinating website up there. I think she's also on MySpace. Is that right, Carla?
I'm on MySpace. I've got my own forum going.
Good deal.
I've got fans coming here and there, and they're all lovely people.
Excellent. Now, before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about the profiling and what you do on the show and in real life here, that it's not just a TV show, that this is something that you go out and you help families with, and that, you know, it's kind of trying to shed new light and open up a case a little bit with something that you might be able to uncover that somebody else did not see. And again, not a slight against law enforcement, it's just intelligent enough for them to know to look for help elsewhere. Now, let me ask, with these cases that you're involving yourself in, how did you get involved in doing police work? I mean, what called you to that effect?
Well, you know, it's not like I have a love affair with the police department, because I don't. so the irony of me becoming involved with law enforcement is just, I couldn't have predicted that one early on, because I lived in fear of every cop that was going to stop me for speeding, and they usually did. And I just really never thought in a million years I'd be doing this. And then I became known for it. I started on a couple of cases in college, and then it grew from there. You know, word spread that because I'm able to direct my intuition and I'm able to direct my mind, that part of my brain, towards that situation and extract detail, and it's disconnected enough, and the way I disseminate it is logical enough, police were welcoming me into cases. It wasn't just because I was some pretty girl and they got to work with some pretty girl for half the day or whatever. It was.
Well, that didn't hurt.
Well, hopefully they think that. I mean, you know, you see how I look during the day. It's not that pretty, but, you know, for camera, we got to do what we got to do. And they would call me, and in the beginning, they would sort of hide behind their wives who were getting a reading with me, a personal private session with me, and they'd be on the phone, and they'd say, hey, look, can I get the last 20 minutes of this read, if that's all right with you? I'm working on a missing persons case. And I said, okay, I see you hiding in the closet. Come on out. You know, and they would do that, and it'd be funny, and I'd make a joke and make light of it, and I'd say, all right, you know, you don't have to walk in shame. Come on,
sure.
Pick up the, you know. And we'd talk about the case, and I'd proffer whatever I could. It usually meant nothing to me, but it made very much sense to them. I would go on a drive with them, and we'd stop at a place where I felt something occurred. And they would say, well, as this situation would have it, it did occur here. And they, you know, they'd be stunned at certain things that would happen, and, you know, word spread. It was usually by word of mouth that people found out about me. And then, of course, the media got a hold of it, and then it was like wildfire, and I actually fought it in the beginning. I didn't want to be known for doing this because I knew the onslaught of contact, email, phone calls, everything else in the media, it would just be overwhelming, and it has been. I receive probably 100 pieces of email every week, and if a show is running, it's usually around 250. And many of these are requests, long, long letters from families and whatnot, and I just literally cannot take all of them, and I let them know that I try. I have no one else responding to my email but me. They take the time to personally write me. I take the time to personally write them back. I mean, they've poured their heart into these letters. Why should I let someone else read them? It's private.
That's great.
It's anguish. It's you know, they want to help. They want to be helped. They are reaching out, and I want to be there. But, you know, sometimes it takes me longer than the same day. The phone calls are the same. I don't want to give everyone the impression that every case I should work on, that I'm requested to work on. I turn away about 50% of them. I am not personally supposed to be involved with resolving that for them. That is left to someone else. They see me on TV, and they think all of a sudden it's a sign that I should be working on this. And I know I do a preliminary evaluation for about 10 minutes or so on the phone with them, and I know from looking at it whether or not I'm supposed to be involved.
Well, and I would assume, too, that doing this, well, first of all, do you have, you know, for lack of a better word, a psychic friends network so you can put them off to other people that do what you do
when
you're overloaded?
You know what, I've never done that. Okay. I cannot say that I can recommend one other human being to work as I do because I'm not in their head and I don't know how they work. I would have to work alongside them for quite some time before I give it my highest recommendation. And I would only give them my highest recommendation. These are lives we're talking about. These are people's families, their destinies. I don't want to hand that off to someone without knowing exactly how they're going to handle things. So I usually try not to do that. It has nothing to do with a disclaimer or liability or anything else. It has
Sure.
to do with, you know, I'm very discerning. You know, and discriminating with my recommendations. So I haven't done that as of yet. But there are many out there that aren't well known. They're not, you know, high profile psychics, and they can be reached easily. And you know what? You just have to determine on your own. When you talk to them, do you get a sense of connection? It's not any one thing you're looking for. I'd say if somebody calls you at 3 in the morning and says, "I've had a vision," you have to listen to me. I've had a vision. That's not something I would pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
I know it happens a lot, too. It happens in a lot of the cases I end up taking. And I let them know that not for an ego standpoint, but just to keep it clean and to manage the chaos, I must be the only psychic on the case because I can only be responsible for the things that I say.
Right.
And I'm responsible for them, right or wrong. I stick with it. And I fix it if it's wrong. I try to go back in, see where I went wrong with it, hone it, you know, sharpen it, sharpen my view on it, and I go back in again.
Well, we watch a lot of Hollywood movies that take place that have psychic profilers, if you will, or psychic mediums that are helping out on cases, and there's always that, you know, element of danger. Have you ever been called in on a case where when you arrive or while you're doing the preliminary investigation, the spirit of the deceased is telling you, "It's my dad," or "It's my boyfriend that did this," and you're talking to that person on the phone? And if so, have you had to remove yourself from going any further? Do you have fear for yourself getting involved in a case like that?
Well, currently I've had death threats, so yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And you have to have some amount of confidence in your own destiny and where you're going. And I have a layer of protection around me. I'm not Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I do have what seems to be a layer of protection around me from these types of things. I don't walk around with armor on, and I'm not saying that that situation won't get particularly dangerous for me at some point personally, but I know that I have a bigger calling, and it can't be all about me and whether I'm going to be okay at the end of it, because I know that I'm carrying a larger message. So if I was afraid to walk outside my door, I wouldn't do this. And it's tricky, and I have to be careful who I associate with. And as far as the perpetrator calling me, and that is the person that's committed the crime, that hasn't happened yet.
Well, that's good to hear.
Well,
if you ever need extra help,
I think they would know to avoid me. You right. know what I mean?
I would think that
I
would think somebody would challenge you. They'd be interested to see if you really could do what you say. You know, because there's so many sickos out there. I would just think that it would be kind of intriguing for them to be the one to call you.
I'd
to
invite
seek help.
Them to do the read, but chances sure. are good that I would see something was up, and my little antenna would go up about it. And during the read, I'd treat it properly and appropriately. But generally, it's immediate family only.
Mm-hmm.
And law enforcement directly assigned. So that sort of cuts out the chance of that happening a lot of times. And if it is a family member who did it who wants the reading, just to see what I would do, and they're testing the waters,
mm-hmm.
they're really brazen about it, and they want to see how much I actually know, don't think for a second that I won't act like everything's okay and then use that information at the appropriate time
sure.
and disseminate it to the appropriate individuals so that that person can be apprehended.
Well, no,
I won't do that because I will.
Since the show's kicked off, you've gotten a lot of press. You're getting a lot more people interested in what you do. Have you been asked to deal with bigger cases like the JonBenet Ramsey or the Jody Huizentrout case?
Yes, I have, and in fact, both of those.
Okay. Is that something we might see on a future season?
Well, I don't know, because it has to be, again, I have a lot of people expressing interest in the Natalie Holloway case as well.
Oh, sure.
And it was someone from the father's side of things. And the thing is that if I've already had an introduction with the mother, for instance, which, you know, I do have a connection with that side, I generally won't take the other party
mm-hmm.
and accept that as a reading. The second thing is that I must be approached by an immediate family member or the family. And law enforcement is certainly welcome to contact me to see what I can say in the case. But, you know, then I evaluate it at that point and see if I have a place there.
Okay.
If I am only being used as some beacon to shed light on their case one more time because they want it in the news, they need to step aside and go to somebody else.
Mm.
And I can usually tell if it's a serious inquiry as far as, you know, whether they're calling me for what I can actually see, if anything, or they're looking to get themselves on another TV series. So we have to look at that as well.
Well, you said that usually you like to have the immediate family give you a call. You know, now, in the event like myself, over 10 years ago, I lost a really good friend, a beautiful woman in Illinois who was brutally murdered,
mm-hmm.
and her child was cut from her womb and kidnapped, and then two of her other children were tortured and murdered as well. You know, they ended up capturing three of the people that they believe were involved in the case, but there was always a rumor that there was a fourth person involved.
Right.
Now, had I known that there was somebody like you out there that could do this, you know, I know I would have contacted the family or helped them because they wanted so desperately to make sure that everybody was brought to justice.
Right.
You know, this is something that, you know, I still think people just think it's, you know, Hollywood. This isn't real. These you know, people with your abilities aren't real. It's some kind of big joke. I mean, how do they find, you know, aside from your show, how are they finding you before? I mean, you just said word of mouth, but you were getting contacts from people all over the world, right?
They would find out from, you know, the website itself, because I had a website up, and they would find out from articles in newspapers that were captured, you know, via Google if they Googled me, or they would find out through other victims' families, because there's an underground network with all the families coming together, which I am so glad is happening. And I'm helping to network with them. I'm connecting families to families that I think could help each other. And not every family belongs with every other family. They have to have a similar circumstance.
Okay. Now, we've got to congratulate you as well. Now, from what we're reading, there's going to be a season two for sure of Haunting Evidence. Is that right?
I saw the press release myself, and I said, wow, I guess we got there. And it looks like we have season two. It's going to premiere in the second quarter as well of 2007.
All right. Now, what are the how many episodes are you guys doing in a season?
You know, this past season we did 9 total.
Okay.
So we still have we have episode 6 coming up this Wednesday, and so we'll see all 9. And I think they're waiting on that because Time Warner just took over and absorbed Court TV, so now they're running things, and it's a much bigger network, much bigger opportunity for everything. So we'll probably be able to see this also on, I'm crossing my fingers, NBC, because remember NBC was airing episodes of Psychic Detectives. This was originally meant as a companion series for Psychic Detectives. It was designed specifically for that, to accompany Psychic Detectives in the hour, since it was a half-hour format.
Okay.
And I think they complement each other quite well.
Definitely.
As far as I know, the usual order is 13
mm-hmm.
when they order, so I'm looking to see maybe an order of 13 episodes. But they do half and half. They generally, from typically in the past, ordered like 6 or 7, and then they order the other 6.
Sure. So is there still a chance they might order a few more for this season then?
I think season 1 is 9 episodes.
Okay.
I think season 1 is season 1. I think at this point we're dipping into season 2. They mm-hmm. may look into, you know, reformatting a little bit. And
now, didn't they do 3 episodes of this earlier last year?
Well, actually, they did 2 episodes.
The first two pilot
episodes. They retooled them slightly because they added their own Court TV narrator, which we've heard his voice on many other programs like Forensic Files and such.
Right.
And you know, they like to use the same guy because it's, you know, it's the trademark of Court TV.
Sure.
And then they retooled them a bit, you know, to make it fit more of what the show grew into. You don't know what the show is going to be until it sort of gels. You see how the cast is. You see all the personalities. You see the information that's emanating forth. You see how to retool it to make the best out of everything. And they really did a fine job of presenting all of our gifts and all of the elements of the show properly. I think it's well balanced.
See, I kind of preferred the second pilot episode when you guys were living in the apartment and it was kind of like a reverse Three's Company. Wait, oh, that wasn't your show, was it?
It wasn't.
Sorry about that.
That was your late night activities.
Yes, it was. Damn, I always get caught on this. So are you getting approached for more from Hollywood to come and consult on films and more TV shows to do this type of thing?
Yeah, actually, and don't forget that I also did the psychic thing for MTV Sphere, so I was the official on and off camera psychic for that program where we went to haunted locations. So they tried to choose actual haunted locations all over the world on the second season, and I was with them from season 1 through season 2 mm-hmm. until they ended. And it was a cult show. It was the first of its kind. They were really breaking into new territory, just like this one. It seems that all the shows I get involved with are breaking new territory. You know, sort of...
That's not bad to be a trailblazer.
No, I kind of like it. It's you know, they're sort of creating a category unto themselves, and...
Well, let me ask you about Fear. When you were involved with the TV show,
yeah.
You know, we've got about 3 minutes here before the break, but were there actual paranormal events going on? Because, you know, from our angle, they always added the sound effects and the camera up the people's nose as they're running down the hall screaming. So, you know, a lot of it just seemed very fake and kind of Hollywood to me.
Well,
but you
I
were
mean,
there on the set. What really occurred?
Well, you know, I found myself... you know, going in knowing that we're actually going to haunted locations, and then you find yourself questioning, are we generating a lot of this because we have fear going in knowing
mm-hmm.
that these places are haunted ahead of time? Are we enhancing the effect? You know, are we scaring ourselves? You know how you do when you're ready to watch a scary movie like The Exorcist, you sit down and you know it's going to be scary going in, and that heightens the effect for you?
Mm-hmm.
I'll begin by saying this before the break that... I went in knowing about the locations. I knew that I had to deal with the cast and that I read them before they went in, so I prepared them for what they may experience. And then I also had to debrief them when they came out. Let me tell you, every single cast member was affected so visually and horrifyingly that I had to spend all night with some of them. And some of these were the most lucid, balanced human beings going into law school and whatever, like they wouldn't be fazed by anything. They came out such a mess, and they were just scrambled. Some of them are still affected today and still have nightmares from what was going on. And mm-hmm. it, you know, the producers were producing a show, granted, and yes, the effects with the music and the lighting and everything, but they actually went to the haunted locations because they had a deep interest in the unknown and the paranormal themselves.
Were they rigging any of the effects at all?
As far as I know, they they allowed the cast to sort of scare themselves,
okay,
which I knew was going on.
Sure.
And but they tried to stay clear and just see what happens on its own. They tried not to create anything or to be involved, because they would be in a camp outside monitoring everything, and they had an EMT unit waiting in case something happened. But these guys were kind of on their own. They would set the stage for it, but they would wait to see what actually occurred and what kind of readings they got. And I was kind of surprised, because I thought, oh, they're going to go in there and try to, like, shake somebody up.
Right.
And it really didn't happen like I thought it was going to happen. And when we come back, I'll tell you about my own experiences, which are highly documented.
Great.
And you would be surprised at what happened to me.
Well, good. Let's do that, and we'll talk more with Carla Baron right after the top of the break here. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest this evening is Carla Baron. We'll be right back after this.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I gotta pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There is more to come from the Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Jeff Rusterholtz with Edina Realty understands that the housing market is changing, and he's prepared to work with you to put together an aggressive plan to ready your home and help you sell quickly. It's Jeff's goal as your full-service real estate agent specializing in the Twin Cities to provide you with superior service at all times. His local expertise and extensive real estate experience will benefit you whether you're serious about buying or selling a home. By taking time to really listen to your needs and desires, Jeff Rusterholtz with Edina Realty will help you find the home of your dreams. And if you're selling a home, his real estate expertise and many effective marketing programs will give you the exposure and edge you need to sell your home quickly and for top dollar. Jeff prides himself on providing unparalleled service, and he looks forward to developing a long-term relationship with you. Visit him online at movewithjeff.com for more details, or call 651-690-8479 to get started on securing your future. That number again, 651-690-8479.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
One.
This show is so frightening, it'll scare the pants off you.
Beat it.
It's people with a dirty mind that think like that.
On second thought, maybe you should just keep them on.
You'd be amazed how often I hear that.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Tim Dennis and Dave Schrader.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. This evening, there we go. Tim's jamming. He be jamming. We've got Carla Baron on the line with us tonight, and Carla is the prettiest member of the new TV show Haunting Evidence over on Court TV Network. You can watch her every Wednesday night from 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a great show where they go over different unsolved crimes, and they're able to hopefully shed some new light on it and reopen cases. We're all just talking to Carla before the top of the break here. She was talking to us about her interaction with the TV show MTV's Fear, and she had promised when we came back she'd tell us a little bit about some of her experiences. So we'll go ahead and turn the forum back over to you.
Okay, make sure everybody's sitting around in the dark with all the lights off.
But keep your clothes on, please. Okay. I'm talking to
and
Tim.
Scary music is playing in the background.
Excellent.
Okay, well, anyway, there were a few instances where... Hold on, this is L.A., so...
Sounds like there's a crime about to happen.
Yeah,
solve it. Quick,
I
who did it?
Getting the call.
I think it was Colonel Mustard. Colonel
right,
Mustard
so
at the 7-Eleven with a chainmail on her. Okay.
Actually, I'm working with LAPD right now on a... They've inquired about working with me, and I've already done a preliminary reading for a kidnap murder case that was here. And, you know, I never worked in my own city before. I always worked in all the other cities except for L.A. Now, all of a sudden, because of the show, I'm working in L.A., which can only be a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's Char Margolis's territory too. Do you think you could kick her ass in a fight, Carla?
Okay.
Take her out, Carla.
I'm sorry. Go on now. You've got your stories to share with us.
Sorry. Answer is yes.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah.
You know, because on her show,
on
her show, if she would have gotten pulled over for a ticket, she would have offered a free reading to the cop to get out of the ticket. Now you don't do that, do you, Carla?
Yeah, no, and you know what? They just don't buy that here.
Okay.
They're so used to pretty women here that I just get lost in the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, there's.
You need to move to Minnesota then. We need more pretty women here.
Oh Lord.
Oh, we're gonna get in trouble for that. Just kidding. Love the pretty women in Minnesota. Anyway, back to the show. Let's hear your.
There are. Yeah, no.
Let's talk about your scary stories.
You're really cutting the whole dating thing out there.
Yeah. Well.
All right. So. Back to the scary stories. Well, yes. It turns out that, you know, I'm usually so tired on this series, MTV Sphere, that they would fly me in 3,000 miles to go to whatever location. I'd be filming an hour after I got off the plane because they had a tight budget and they didn't want to keep people for extra days. On Haunting Evidence, I have travel days where I get to rest and sleep the next day, and then we film the next day after that.
Wow.
Because it's so hard on me. I've traveled over 100,000 miles. Because I live in California, all the episodes are back east or in the middle somewhere. I don't get any downtime for myself, so in order to do this properly, I needed to be rested, and you know, so that was part of the criteria. But with MTV Sphere, it wasn't that way. I was just getting my feet wet with TV at that point, and it actually heightened the agitation on the show because you're so tired that you know, anything is affecting you. You're so sensitive to your environment. You know how you get when you're tired? You're giddy, you know?
Yes.
And it's 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, and you're done filming. And, you know, you're usually out in the elements. And I remember one episode at the Eastern State Penitentiary. And it's in Philadelphia. I'm at a very nice hotel. I had a whole suite, by the way. I had this whole setup where I could have lived there, actually.
Listen, she's a big shot,
kitchen. I had the living room. They had Sci-Fi Channel, so I was happy. I was watching Dark Shadows in the morning.
Very
it was
good.
The perfect morning coffee, Dark Shadows, you know, Barnabas Collins. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all going on.
And then there was me.
They actually had, you know, the bedroom, and then they had a laundry room facility in the bathroom where you could do laundry, washer and dryer. It was like a little apartment.
Indoor plumbing. We got to move us out to California and Pennsylvania, Tim.
Actually, that was in Philadelphia. So there I am at this hotel suite, and I'm there for the week, and we're filming this episode, and it had snowed, so it was freezing, because most of that place, if you've ever been there, is very wide open. And, you know, all the windows are broken, and it's frighteningly cold. So we're filming, and we're getting it all in. I'm with the crew, and the crew is telling me when I get there, this one guy, he was one of the camera guys for the show, he's over 6 feet tall. He's telling me, he said, Carla, I needed you here yesterday. He goes, I am not hallucinating, and this actually happened, and we have footage of it, where I was kicked down a flight of stairs. He said, I didn't slip. I had sure footing. It wasn't icy where I was. And I felt a kick in my back. And I'm rolling camera, and it's showing me rolling down the stairs. And I'm lucky I didn't break my neck. And he said, I'm still shaking. I need to talk to you about this. And, you know, so he's frightening me before I even go in. And I could tell he was visibly frightened. And this is a grown man who's used to this by now. You know, so I'm like, all right, so I go in. I unpack some of my stuff in the room. I surveil the room. I do not, as a rule, let any housekeeping come in or have anyone come into the room. I tell them at the desk, and no one is allowed to enter my room because I have, you know, my tarot cards and my paraphernalia laying out,
sure.
And I don't want them touching anything. That's a rule.
Be careful when you say paraphernalia, Carla. I think Chong just got arrested for having paraphernalia.
Okay, we don't want to say paraphernalia. We want to say Carla's psychic tool.
There you
That's
go. That's better.
Hey,
anyway, my crystals or whatever I happen to have with me. So I didn't want anyone in there, and that's a given. That's a hard and fast rule with me. So I go, I film, I come back, I'm exhausted. It was scary in there, and we were picking up quite a few things in the one cell block. And I am coming back. My nerves are frayed from having been there,
mm-hmm.
from absorbing some of this energy, you know, the psychic element while I was in the Eastern State Penitentiary with
sure.
All this killing and this violence and these individuals that, you know, the air is thick with it. So I come back and I'm noticing the room. Nobody's touched anything. Everything is good. And I usually have a pretty photographic memory. So I remember where everything is.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's good. But I'm getting this sense while I'm in my bed. I go into my bed. I'm ready to go to sleep that something is watching me or someone is watching me. And I literally am talking out loud saying, look, I am too tired to deal with you right now. You will stay at the door frame. You will not come within the perimeter of this room. I will get some sleep tonight. And I'm talking out loud, just like that,
mm-hmm.
ordering, you know, in a very commanding tone, because with spirit, I've, especially the spirit that's ominous and not of a good energy, okay, I'm noticing that I have to be commanding in my tone. So I'm
right.
telling it to stay outside the perimeter of that room. I go to sleep. I'm still having the sense of being watched all night. My bedroom door was open, you know, where the living room and the kitchen and everything was. And I'm still getting, and I'm too scared and it's too cold to get up to even go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just literally, all I'm doing is sleeping. I get up. And I still have the sense like something is in there with me. I go out, I make coffee in the kitchen, and all of a sudden on the door frame, these are 15-foot ceilings, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm noticing up high up on the door frame, I'd say about 13 feet up, there is a man's handprint on the door frame leaning into my bedroom.
Mm.
That was not there when I went to bed. Trust me, it was not there. It was a small man's hand. It was larger than my hand. My hands are fairly small. But it was a man's hand, not a woman's. You know, it wasn't tapered fingers or anything.
Are you sure Gary Coleman wasn't working security at that hotel?
Positive. Well, Gary Coleman would have had to get up on his little ladder, wouldn't he?
What you or talking about, Carla? Of,
on the shoulders of Willis or
that's
something.
That's right.
So, okay, fine. Register that. I took a picture of it even. Because I just, you know, it was odd. And I showed it to Chris Abrego, the producer on the show. And we were all talking about it. I said, it wasn't there before. Fine, go to bed. And the next day, the cast starts with their thing. You know, and I'm reading the cast, every cast member. I had to read them before they went in.
Mm-hmm.
And there were usually about six of them. And they had to stay the two nights. Okay, we start the first night. They're out. What I normally do is sleep with my makeup on top of my bed and wait for the call.
Okay.
And the call is somebody's quit and I have to go get them.
All right.
Okay? So I wait for the call. I'm like, damn, the call's coming soon. It's 40 minutes. I just got to bed 40 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
I get the call. This guy says, is this Carla? And I said, yes. I said, are you here from production? Is this Carla Baron? I said, yes. And he had a slight accent, but the voice was very distinctive. I said, yes. And the phone rang very loudly. You know how those hotel phones are? They ring really loud.
Yes.
I mean, your nerves are, you know, you're not going back to bed, right?
Right.
So I'm talking to this guy for 5 minutes. I'm like, yes. I said, I'm coming down. Like, I felt like I needed to learn another language.
Sure.
I said, yes. I said, is this production? He wouldn't tell me who he was. And he kept asking if it was me. And I said, yes, I'll be right down. Where are you? In the lobby. And then all of a sudden the phone went dead. And I called down to the front desk and I said, I just got a call to my room. And I said, is production down there at the door in the lobby somewhere? I'm sorry, Miss Perrin, you haven't had a call this evening. And all the calls have to go through the switchboard. And we're positive you didn't have a call this evening.
The call is coming from inside your room.
The
Wasn't that just the movie?
Has to be, even if it comes from one of the other rooms in the hotel, it has to go through the switchboard.
Ah, yuck.
No one knew. It was part of our contract with MTV. None of my friends knew where I was because it was termination time then.
Mm-hmm.
They could fire us for that. So if we told anyone where we were, that would be cause for, you know, me leaving the show. So no one knew where I was. They couldn't even call me on my cell phone. Nobody knew. The only people that knew was production. So So I spent 20 minutes on the phone with security talking about this call. Miss Barron, you have not had a call this. I spent 5 minutes talking to this guy. Okay, fine, whatever. I called production. They tell me, I said, did you just have a guy come over here? They said, Carla, we had a problem with the electrical equipment. We haven't even started yet.
Wow.
Fine. Mm. Then I go back to bed. An hour later, it's midnight. Someone's knocking at my door. I go to the door. I'm looking at the people. I'm not seeing anybody, but the same guy's voice. Swear to God, I'm not making this up.
Wow.
Same guy's voice, same accent, says, housekeeping. I said, it's 12 midnight. I didn't order housekeeping. Who the hell are you? And I swing open the door.
Candy Graham.
Nobody there.
Come on, it was Landshark, wasn't it?
Candy Graham.
I am in the middle of a floor where it's a very long way to either end, and there's no other way out.
Oh, unreal. So, and this was,
and
you were still at Eastern State?
I am literally up out of bed at the door, talking through the door to this person with the same voice, the same accent.
Was this still when you were in Pennsylvania at Eastern State?
Still at Pennsylvania in this Philadelphia hotel at Eastern State Penitentiary, filming an episode for MTV Sphere.
Do you think it was maybe one of the spirits of the prisoners that followed you home?
I know it was, because I'm telling you, I was freaked out by that time. I was like, okay, I'm actually talking to someone through a door. Mm. I mean, it's not like I didn't hear the door, you know, and someone knocking at the door, and I didn't dream it, because I was sleeping very lightly, if anything. You know, I just closed my eyes. I wasn't even asleep. I wasn't in any deep sleep or anything. I was waiting for the call. I'm sleeping on top of the covers with all my clothes on and makeup on. You know, so I wasn't even really sleeping. I'm a very light sleeper.
No, oh, that's unreal. And well, now you're going to give a lot of people a lot of nightmares tonight. That's good.
Let me tell you something. And that wasn't the only location. I'll tell you one real quick one. We were at the Lemp Brewery, which was actually another brewery.
Okay.
Which is actually towards your way, I think. Isn't it the, they conduct tours there now. I don't think we're still allowed to say where it was, but everybody who shot the series knew where it was. And we're at this, we're underground, you know, where they're doing, you know, the episode. And I'm with the camera guy shooting my documentary. I'm walking around. We're in the dark. I'm usually with my trusty little flashlight, you know, looking around. And I'm doing the show. I'm talking. I'm saying whatever I'm saying. And I'm thinking he's kidding around with me. And, you know, he usually would, like, touch my shoulder or do something weird, you know, just to get a reaction out of me. And he touches my left shoulder. And I said, you know what? Knock it off. And, you know, knock it off. And I pull the flashlight over, and nobody's there.
Oh.
And I start screaming. Turns out he was 3 rooms ahead of me. And the whole time I'm talking to him, and this person put their hand on my left shoulder, and I put the flashlight over there, and I said, stop screwing around with me. And, I mean, literally, I was screaming. They couldn't stop me from screaming.
Unreal.
You know what he said to me? He said, don't stop screaming. This is great. Let's get that.
Always about the ratings, isn't it?
And I said, shut up. I said, something touched me, and it was a physical hand.
Well, Carla, I don't mean to cut you short here, but we've got about 15 seconds left.
Okay.
We want to thank you very much. We'll have you back on to tell us more of your stories.
Thank
and for everybody
so
out there,
much.
Check out the show. It's Haunting Evidence every Wednesdays at 10:30 Eastern Time. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. And thank you to our very special guest, Carla Barron.